I was thinking when it comes to classical culture made today, if it's classical music, if it's old master painting, if it's writing a novel or writing a play, what I'm concerned with always is that you need to know your values before you start making, so that you understand the long-term goal of what you're doing. And that's why I'm so concerned with the idea of kitsch as a name for classical culture. And of course, this is where we have some differences, if that's a fitting name or not. But I was thinking, if you start first with looking at what a classical work is, I think you can say that it is something that is well crafted, worked with over a long time. It is a mimesis either of the external world or of the internal emotions in when it comes to music, and it has a primal or archetypal content, something that is eternal. That is not too reflected at the time. That's why you have the word classic, which means eternal, right? And I think I want to hear what you say about that. I mean, if we talk about if that should be called kitsch or art, first to agree on what classical work is. So sort of the main bullet points on that. Do you have anything to add to what is classical?
Well, yes, and I don't know if we have differences. I think that although these issues are very evolutive and important to discuss in a continuous process, I think the main point about what they used to call art before the Industrial Revolution is that the original word art in German, Kunst, Kunst, comes from the word können, which means knowledge. So actually, the original word means skill. An artist is considered, or was considered in pre-industrial times, as a person with extraordinary skills in any field. It could be a creative field, or it could also be a manual field, or even a sportive field. So for some reasons, during the Industrial Revolution, after Kant, and also some capitalist developments in England, which I would like to talk about, which is interesting. Art came to mean originality instead of skill. So what we see now, and I think that might be a good entry point for this discussion, is there are two worlds. You know, we have the academic world and we have the people's world. And we need to reflect upon, as I see it, how the words are actually used in an academic context and how they're actually used by everyday people. So if you take, I remember the Norwegian national football trainer when he was to comment the Brazilian football team, which was about to play against somebody. And he said, and I will never forget that, he said, "These people are not football players, they are artists." So what he actually meant by that was that these people are so skilled in what they're doing then that we have to call them artists. And without knowing it, I think that he actually used the original sense of the word art, but what it's supposed to mean, at least in German and Norwegian, commenting a superior skill set. So of course, in academia, in modern academia, it means something else. It means originality. You're an artist if you do something original. So I think that even today, if you ask somebody what is art on the street, and if you ask a professor at the university, you will get two different answers. So I think that's important to keep in mind, because it means that the definition of terms is not necessarily made in stones. There are different understanding of terms, for kitsch, which we will come back to, I think the same counts.
Well, it's it's a broader picture. So just to comment on that, so we're sort of starting with talking about what these concepts mean. The whole idea of art, one thing is that it placed originality, fine art, as that value system was invented in the 18th century, places originality as the primal value and not the skill with which it is made. But there is also this, it should be defined even clearer, because it's at that age where they start talking about art or craft, which is a separation that shows you that if you are going to make something that is classical, well, you need something that is craft-based, which then is not considered to be part of the modern system of the fine arts. And when you look at the word artist, you can look at Vasari, for example, Lives of the Artist, as the translations say. But he uses the disciplines, Lives of the Painters, Sculptors, and Architects. And even Michelangelo, the greatest of these that he mentions, is still called an artisan. It refers back to the term art, ars, skill, which is correct, but it's with a little a. What happens with the modern system of the fine art is that you get the capital A and it becomes a metaphysical system. So it's kind of like, this is an old pun, you know, to say, to look at someone in the 18th century that said, who said they were gay, meant something else than today, right? So it's the same word, but the content of it is completely different. It goes from just being a neutral term for anyone who masters any kind of skill that can be taught and learned, to becoming a metaphysical system where you cannot learn it and you cannot teach it and you cannot acquire high quality, what is considered high quality within the fine arts, through educating yourself and going into to the skill of the craft. So, and that's why I think it's so important that when I, for example, say, and I speak as a painter, trying to paint like Rembrandt today, well, then you look at what Rembrandt did. He was trying to be as sentimental as could, meaning a broad variation of, or presence of a broad variation of emotions, right? And it goes into imitating outer nature, merging that with this poetic pathos-filled representation. And then you cannot say that he was an artist, because, and not as a polemical point or anything, but just purely cultural history, if you just look at it disinterested, he doesn't tick the boxes of what...
Not the modern definition of it.
The modern system of fine art, and which is what we are plagued with today, right? What classical culture is plagued with today.
Yes, of course. So why we discuss terms and terminology is because we have a problem, obviously. And so we try to find our way to solve this problem. That is, of course, correct. And I would like to add something which I've just thought about the other day. It's about copyrights and ownership. So with the Industrial Revolution, the concept of copyright, which means that there is an idea that occurs that your thought or your piece of work is your property. A thought can be a property. This appeared at the same time as the Kantian art theories. And
appeared?
Yes.
I thought you said disappeared.
No, it appeared historically at just at the same time. Yeah. And what does that mean? So if your idea should be a sellable product or a copyrighted product, it means that it must be unique and it must be original, right? So it touches the same base phenomenon. And from this point on, a lot of problems occur, because if you're to sell a product, if your thought is your product and this is what you need to do to sell, it means that your thought must be different from everybody else's thought. And it means that your work will be colored by the need of being different, and you move away from the need of being universal. So these two movements went together into a development where things get more and more fragmented into just you as an individual, and even now with postmodernism, you can cut yourself even in slice yourself further in pieces until only atoms are left. So this is the historical development I see, which has been really important for the definition of originality and subjectivity. I think that subjectivity and objectivity is also interesting to talk about, perhaps a little later on. So. What I'm thinking while looking at this anew, to me, the creative world might be better divided into three parts, and not only two. So what I understand out of the art versus kitsch dilemma is that we have a dualist situation, which you either do one thing or the other. But I'm thinking that tentatively, introducing something which I try to call universal art, which is more or less what you defined with Greek thought, with universalism, objectivism, working with understandable language, understandable forms, being able to commute them, communicate them, being able to, through human emotion, make things that are not subjective, but things that can relate us. I tentatively try to call it universal art. And the two other poles would be abstract art, which corresponds to subjectivism and modernism, and also something which I think is interesting, it is conservative art, which is about preservation of things, about thinking of the past as a golden age, which cannot be reproduced, and just try to conserve what already happened. The Egyptian culture is one example of that. It's about balming mummies into eternal things that should not move. They should be static. A museum conservation person, or a person who copies pictures for preservation is conservative. Or people who want to rebuild old buildings with designs that were made 200 years ago. It's also a conservative way of thinking. So, and when I've thought about these three polar things, interesting things come up in the dynamics between them. So, but it would be interesting, I have a question for you as well. So, when Nerdrum and his way of thought very boldly introduced the word kitsch, which is a disputed and difficult word to use, but also extremely interesting to use because there is a lot of truth in it. When was this, like 20 or 30 years ago?
Yes, well, I'll get to that, but there's something I have to comment on what you said first. My position is at least that, first, look at the basic values of fine art, so that we agree on or acknowledge the cultural historical relevance of that. This whole idea of aesthetical indifference, this whole idea of craft not being important, and the idea of reflecting your time. Mm-hmm. These are the three, at least three foundational sort of cornerstones or whatever, of fine art, which is why I always see, when you use the term art, you always bring with you these basic principles that will color what you do. It colors your allegiance to what kind of principles, what kind of values that you act according to. So if you, to speak for myself, if I as a figurative painter identify as an artist, I will start then to say, oh, I have to be original, I cannot look like Odd Nerdrum because I have to distance myself, and then I lose that possibility of learning from him. Mm-hmm. I cannot be sentimental, and then I lose the contact with the audience, and I have to reflect my time, and my work dies with the time. So that's the problem I see, that it's not like some kind of mystical idea, it's just that words carry meaning and have a history. And you will be guided in a certain direction if you then say, well, that's what I'm doing. And everybody else knows what art is. They will guide you in that direction away from the classical goal.
But only in an academic context.
Yeah, but that's the problem. They are the ones who have the power. But it's not only that the people in the academic context have the power. I mean, I talked to this philosopher Byrne, and I said, you know, I met people who don't even know how to spell the word philosophy, and they ask me if I should distance myself from Nerdrum and become modern. So it's so disseminated, and that's why I'll get to your question. That's why I'm so concerned with kitsch, because I see kitsch as this kind of a key that you can, where you can open up your art neuroses. Right. All those things. Because like this composer, Fredrik Mogler, that I had on, he talked about losing the fear of being sentimental. And where does that fear come from? Mm. Where does it come from? Well, it comes from the whole art ideas. And I think if you have these overarching terms that you work with, you can start to see what kind of values are within the modern art concept and what kind of values were expelled and called kitsch. Because if you see what the definition of kitsch, it is perfectly in place or it aligns with what we talked about in the beginning when it comes to a classical masterpiece. And the thing that really was such a fantastic thing for me to see There was this sculptor who had a retrospective exhibition. And this was after we had published on Kitsch. That was in 2000, so that answers your question about when. And that was quite extraordinary, because he was writing in a big newspaper, and then he said, okay, Perrung's works are very sentimental, obviously inspired by Rodin, so it's sentimental, unoriginal, and of course implicitly trying to be somehow eternal. But now I've read on Kitsch and I understand that these are our values in Kitsch, and I will try to judge this exhibition accordingly. And he sort of got some gloves on so that he didn't get dirty on his hands when he was touching the work, metaphorically. Mm. And then he could give at least fairly reasonable, review of it. Not saying, oh, he is, of course, they don't use swear words, but when he could give a fairly reasonable review of it. And that's interesting, because he doesn't have to say, oh yes, Kitsch is best, but he can get some tools. Understand that this culture, to speak politically correct, this culture has different set of rules, and you judge it according to that, and you say, okay, well, according to those rules, it's okay. But if you apply art rules, modern, because of modern art, then it goes completely wrong. And I think that's the value, or one major value of the Kitsch term. You can be evaluated according to your terms, and you are more aware of them, so that you can go channel your energy even more clearly into that direction.
Well, I'm happy for that, and I think you were lucky that actually the one person was interested enough to read about the concept and then evaluate it. And I think the general rule is that will not happen, because some words, just as you rightly say, are charge with historical matter. And the word Kitsch is also charged with historical matter, depending on the cultural context. I spend a lot of time in Austria and Germany, so I know what the word means in German in a everyday language there, which is different from what you're talking about. But in general, is your impression that people understand what you mean by Kitsch? Because I've been frequented by a lot of artists, and I frequent a lot of people, and I have the impression that a lot of people don't understand it.
And well, it's not more difficult than when that was 1775, was it? Don't quote me on that. But anyway, Sulzer publishes a sort of an art dictionary that you can read about it in Paul Oskar Christler's essay, The Renaissance System of the Arts. And when that book was published, the young Goethe, I think it was like 25 or something, reviews the book and then writes, okay, well, you can put any kind of discipline together and claim that it has an overarching structure and that they have connection, that they're unified by some principles. The point being then that when the first time the word fine art is used, as we know it, is 30 years before that. And Goethe is still ridiculing this novel idea because it's not getting disseminated yet and established yet. It's first with let's say 80 years after the fine art is sort of really coming into being in the mid-18th century. That's when it becomes normal. And then that's when they start saying just art instead of fine art. And then you get that wishy-washy lack of difference between fine art and art, because the same word is just being used, right? Mm. So I am not concerned with, does it take time? Do people understand it? Well, then it's my job then to speak for myself to try to explain it. Like, for example, during this conversation here or with the KU Palace as such. Okay, well, then we are reaching more people. And I think what you then need to do is to reach that one person, or these two persons, or that person, and he totally understands it, and suddenly he's published some book on it. Or you cannot plan these things, right? So, but anyways, what do you think of this, the value of that, being judged according to your own principles? Because my position is that when you use the art term, it brings along with it so many ideas that go contrary to, for example, what you try to do, like we talked about your work, Quendi, that doesn't fit that, doesn't fit the modern art, system of the arts, or the principles of the modern art term.
Well, this is an interesting question of principle. Should you fight for a term, or should you abandon it? You know, you talked about the capital letter, which changed. So the original word art was with a minor letter, and then it wasn't a
religious term. Yeah.
And in my worldview, I'm more of a warrior kind of person. I would like to try to provoke a little and just turn the letter back. So I would just like to put the small letter back, make some changes, and see what happens. That's certainly legitimate, because I can argue for the original meaning of the word, point one, pre-industrial, and point two, and I'm going to continue insisting on that, the everyday use of a word is, for me, the superior definition of the word. What people actually understand with the word is, for me, the superior definition of it. What academics, by chance, by historical defines the word is, for me, inferior, because I think it's most short-lived. And I think your clients are not academics. I think your clients who buy your pictures, certainly not academics, people buy your pictures. And we need to take them seriously. And if you take the word kitsch, and I love what you have done with the kitsch. This has been so important, perspective into the debate. It has been very, very important. It's about legitimizing human emotions, being universal, being like everyone else. It's just the contrary of our originality. And it's been a very important contribution to this whole debate. But if you take the German and even French everyday use of the word kitsch, you know what it means. If you go on the Wikipedia and you write kitsch, they're going to show you a photo of the plastic garden gnome, right? Which Germans put in their garden. So that would be the typical definition of German kitsch. It's a tasteless plastic object which you post in your garden. This is what people understand with the word. And now you take it a lot further, because for you it's about sentimentality, being universal, and being not original.
Or not that as a goal, as a value.
As a value. You can also,
even neutrally speaking, be original. But
you can be original if you're lucky or unlucky, depends. But this is not something you can create. You might be original. For example, I always thought that that Nerdrum's paintings from Iceland actually are very original, because there's nothing like it. And you can recognize it from 500 meters distance, and you know it's Nerdrum, and you know it's because it's completely unique. So it you can almost qualify it actually as original, even if people say it's the Renaissance style. I disagree.
It's an amalgamation of quite a lot of different sources that it's learned from.
Yeah.
So if you break it down, you see that the technique or the composition, all these things is not original, but in that landscape, you could say that's not
the composition
done exactly like that.
The composition is like what, because it's authentic. It's actually lived.
Yeah, but then still we're talking about just a neutral phenomenon. Mm. Right? That's not why it's good. It's good
exactly.
Because it's so well crafted and so gripping and so dramatic.
Exactly, and it is authentic. So sometimes when you are authentic and you actually live on Iceland and you paint the landscapes which you have in front of you, then you're authentic. You might be original as well, but that's just luck.
Well, you don't need to live there to paint it, but I mean, there's something that you said that is wrong, because that's something I've been really concerned with from the beginning, and that is that what Nerdrum did when he brought this term in, and I've really gone into it, and I've seen, compared what has been written about old Nerdrum and what has been written about kitsch, and see that it's basically a blueprint, and what the only thing that is happening is that the connotation is changing, because it's the same thing as you can have a to use political examples, you can have a racist describe a person with such and such color skin, and you can say, well, that's objectively characteristics. Then you decide, do you find that to be good or bad, or is it irrelevant, right? That's a different discussion. So what we're talking about is the relation to the facts that are there, because what is being criticized, and I don't think you can, if you read these kitsch critics, what they're saying has been so disseminated that there, I don't see like a huge difference between the academics up there and the people down there. Because the people down there, they have generally no specific interest in it, and they just follow it, whatever it is. But also, it's a strange thing that to say, okay, well, with kitsch, people envision garden gnomes. And implicitly, correct me if I'm wrong, you're saying that's not something you want to be identified, or one doesn't want to be identified with. But then I'm thinking, well, what about Rothko or Picasso? Is that something you want to be identified with? Or beep, bo, beep, beep, bo, beep. Is that something you want to be identified with? Because you can flip that argument the other way around and say, well, art, what's art? Well, that's beep, bo, bo. Is that something you want to be identified with? So I don't see the relevance of that as an argument itself, because you can have, again, Goethe didn't ridicule it, this term. Well, he ridiculed it, but it wasn't like he was reacting to the art term as it was kitsch. But it was, he just saw it as something completely strange, and what a strange invention, right? So there's always this reaction to terms, but you cannot take emotional reactions that you're referring to as a valid argument. Because, and that's something I always am puzzled by, that when people hear, okay, hear the word kitsch, but let's say you hear, I don't know any names of some poisonous spider. They probably have Latin names. You hear that Latin name, and you think, okay, what? Yeah, well, it's a spider. Okay. Well, actually, it's like this big, or that doesn't sound good, and it's poisonous. Oh no, shit. So the more you get to know about it, the more skeptical you get. But with kitsch, immediately it's like you read 10 books about it, and you just react emotionally as if you know that it's dangerous. Do you see the point? I mean, I'm not saying that you are suggesting it, but to have that as an argument that it is not understood or it's associated with something bad, those are not intellectually valid arguments.
No, but again, you are in the realm of academia. You know, I'm fluent in German and French, and I know how to use this word in the everyday language. So in the context of whatever people are feeling and reacting to. And in the everyday language of people, the word is actually used in a negative, sort of way.
That's
and,
given.
Yeah. And of course, that might be incorrect, but that's how actually people are using the word. So when you work with this material, you have a lot of resistance in front of you. So that's why I understand what you talk about, but I just see trouble ahead. Because you have to fight against...
I thought you were a fighter, a warrior.
Yes.
Come on!
But you have to have a war which you might theoretically win. So that's why I tentatively investigate together with you if it could be interesting to reintroduce the word art, but call it universal art, tentatively. At least think about it. But we agree on the concepts. But what I see is that a lot of people do not understand what you mean by the term kitsch. And if you're lucky to have somebody who read the books, who actually, I have to think anew about this. I see the historical context and everything which we obviously agree about. That's nice. But the probability is that it will not happen very often. So you can be optimistic and say that, yeah, this is going to take us 200 years. You know, and it might, or let's try to develop it further. Yeah, you have several options for this.
Right. I think Adler was already introduced the word art in that sense. I think it was very early on when I was a student, he said, it's no art to make art, but it is an art to make kitsch. I think that that's a wonderful clarification of what that word means. Mm. But I... as I say, you can say that, well, I've said it myself too, I know the art of painting. But to say that it is art, that's when you start moving into the metaphysical realm. And that's when you bring in all of those values that work against what you're trying to do if you're Working with classical culture somehow.
If you accept the modern situation of things, no, I have a reactionary element in me. So I also live in previous centuries, you know. So it also means that I live with definitions that were viable in previous centuries. And this is one part of what I call universal art, timelessness. Mm. Being timeless means that all things are viable, past, present, and future.
Like what to learn from.
Yes, even the future, because I'm also metaphysic, and I believe that there are superior things in play in the world. That we need to ponder about and be in connection with. And timelessness is one of them, because we obviously live in the present, but at the same time, all times are coexisting in something. And that's why when I think about something, for example, I start with my own thoughts, and I try to be confident about them, and I then go back to Aristoteles or Plato to see if they agreed with me, which they often do. I don't start with Plato or Aristoteles and see if I agree with them, I see if they agree with me. And it goes both ways, so it's kind of a communication which makes the effort of thinking itself as a timeless activity. You know what I mean? But it starts with me, it doesn't start with them. So because I'm confident that the universal past, present and future is actually existing right now, and we can be confident enough to dare having confidence in our own thoughts.
Yeah, but then I guess you're saying it in some way, but it seems like we have a different understanding of it at the same time. I'm not so concerned with having thought it first myself. I'm more concerned with when you go into this discipline of painting, there are certain objective values or principles that work. And you can learn those values, those principles that you were perhaps not aware of, and they can help your work. And then my personality must stand in the way of that, because then I lose the possibility of improving as a painter. But throwing something else from a slightly different angle. Mm. There are some examples, and it's one thing is film music. The second thing is screenwriting. And the third thing is the only dome, the only cathedral we have in Norway. I'll explain. So, and I think I mentioned that example to you before on film music. The point is that these things are how classical craft is judged when it's not judged under the umbrella of art. So you have that Carl Jenkins had his Millennium Symphony performed. And in the radio, they were very negative about it because it was tonal music. But then in the same radio, when it's film music being performed in a concert hall, it has so much pathos, it has so much sentimentality, then they have no problem with it. Tonal music is suddenly okay, but when it's presented like this, it's not okay. When the name is Olsen, it's not okay. When the name is Williams, it's okay, or whatever. Mm. Second example is then this thing of screenwriting. So in movie business, again, you have to grip the audience. If the conversation is too dull, do this and that and this. Clear, objective things that you just go and do so that you get that goal that you're after. And they don't care about, oh my God, is it original or is it... Have I thought to myself? And then the last example, I went up to this cathedral in Norway with my son, and we visited the workshop there where they make copies because the sculptures are being destroyed or slowly being destroyed, and they replace them and all these things. And the very strange thing was that then this is a museum project, and then the state sponsors classical craft and educates people there and have no problem with it at all.
Yes, because it falls into the conservative category.
It's in another context, under another umbrella than art. That's my idea or my point, what I'm arguing here.
Well, I think that, I mean, we would have to listen to those two pieces of music which you mentioned initially. We might be open for the possibility that the film composer actually could have been better than Carl Jenkins, and thus the critics were such, because there's to do tonal music that will not help you. I mean, you have good tonal compositions and bad tonal compositions.
But I mean, you also know the how these people think. You know, there's a general tone there in yes. these critics. Right?
Well, I think the difference the difference is interesting, because Carl Jenkins, when he composes, he's there as one single person responsible for everything. A film composer is a part of a team. He's a part of a dynamic which makes his ego almost disappear. He dissipates into a big project, which is the Gesamtkunstwerk, which is the film.
Because you work with film music yourself.
Yes, a little bit, but it's also, you know, difficult to, or not difficult, it's finally not so interesting to work with films that are not that great. If you should be a great film composer, you need a great director. There cannot be a great film music, almost never, without having a great film to direct to, because those two things go together.
But what do you think about this idea of suddenly being allowed to do something because you're under a different name? Or be not that it's accepted suddenly to be tonal because it's under a different name? And of course, what I'm trying to say is that, okay, if you're under Kitsch, then you have a different idea, different mindset, you have a clear direction of what you do, and you don't take care of these art neuroses that keeps you back, oh, I must be sentimental and all these things. What do you think of that argument?
I'm not sure I'm very in connection with all those criteria. I so agree about crafts. You learn your craft, and then, and that's about 95% of what you do, and there is this 5%, you know, who's going to make the difference between a great painting of you and a mediocre painting of somebody else. But I think at some point that you need to be able to use this playfully and vividly and be vital and be alive. And there is some point where you will do your thing and not be consciously in an exercise, in a technical exercise or a craft consciously, because you master it. A master is somebody who will not think about the craft, because he's penetrated by the craft. He doesn't have to think consciously about it. He's a master of it. That's why he's a master. I'm more into that. I think that we need years and years and years of learning, of being schooled. But there also comes a point where you might allow yourself some improvisation and some madness, you know, one point of madness. And I see in some of Nørdrum's paintings, they're actually quite mad. It's not, you know, it's not paintings of a banana or just a head or you know, any object. It's actually quite surrealistic. It's madly contextualized, like in a dream world, and I think that when you bring the mastery with you, you might allow yourself that kind of vitality where you just explode and you have a vision of something, and it's on a borderline of reality, and that's when the masterpiece.
Well,
occurs.
I think if there's one person I think of who has really all the time been concerned with knowing philosophy and why he's doing what he's doing and reading a lot and not just standing there to paint, then it's Odd Nørdrum. And I think what you say reminds me a little bit of this, and that's my major concern. And I want to hear what you think of this. It seems that you're colored by this Kantian genius idea of expressing yourself.
No, it's not. Not about me.
Okay,
it's not about me.
It sounds like
it's about what you receive from universal values, which connects us all.
Okay, because one thing I've been thinking about. So okay, just neutral speaking, as people who think like that, I have to express myself. There's something we talked about here and with Borknerd. About, and it reminded me of something that Larry Shiner writes in The Invention of Art. And that's when you get that shift, or when the modern system of fine art comes into being, becomes a thing. Then they start talking about creating. And when he mentioned that, at the beginning, I was like, why is that a problem? And it reminded me of this. And I see the point here that when you leave craft and you shall become someone who, the genius is some kind of a god who creates ex nihilo, so to speak, then you are, yeah, then you're leaving craft, you're leaving empirical study of nature. Mm. So the point is that this word lingers on and conditions your way of thinking when you start to say words like I am creating instead of I am imitating. I do believe these small words can either hinder you or help you towards that goal, because they carry a certain idea of why you're doing things and the point of doing things.
Yes.
What do you think of that?
Neither nor. I think that I'm neither imitating, neither creating. I think I'm receiving something. I think that everything we do is already done. And I think that we can be in a mindset where we actually receive this. It's nothing to do with me whatsoever. When I'm in this state, and I think I've done my best things when I am in this state, I receive something that already exists. Mm. It's like, for me, the creator, what word can we use, the craftsman, yes. It's like a fisher, you know, he goes and he throws his thing in and the hook, and if he's lucky, get the fish. And his work is actually to cook the fish and make it deliciously looking for his guests, you know. He never made the fish. The fish already existed. So I have this relation to these processes. So it's neither nor, you know.
Mm. But what is your main argument to use the concept of art for classical culture?
The word art must be contextualized with another word. That's what I call it, universal art. The good thing about it is that you can share it into several categories. So you could have abstract art, and you can have classical art, and you can have universal art, or why not kitsch art, you know? I think that would be useful.
Yeah, but there is just... Again, I guess this is getting to a point where we just have different ideas about what word functions best, because I cannot get out of this idea that you bring with the values of that term, even though you say that you're talking about the small a instead of a capital A, mm. There is these values come along with it. And also, if you think about how it conditions your way of thinking, well, abstract art, if you mean that literally, as far as I can see, kitsch versus art is not about figurative versus abstract. It's about the aesthetical indifference that Kant is talking about. That's the thing. It can be as figurative as you want. Photorealists, very figurative. And it has no emotional presence at all. So it's art, figurative art. That's not it. Conservative art, well, that is modernism. That is that whole strain. And universal art, that's what I'm thinking. Well, the whole idea there, and of course Hegel comes in with this whole idea of the Zeitgeist, which is also presupposed in Kantian Descartes' idea of the originality, that goes away from that. Because if you're talking about something that is universal, originality and who made it is per definition irrelevant.
Completely irrelevant.
Yeah, yeah. So and that's why that's my main problem with the word art. And I think, but I would say, as in my case as well, people shouldn't just use the word kitsch because they want to agree and make people happy. They need to go into it and study it themselves, obviously, and test the arguments, like I've done also. But I do believe that these things that we're talking about when you're talking about the modern concept of art, those are not my ideas about art. Those are cultural historical facts that I'm referring to. So that's why I'm saying that if you at least can get people to not use the word art, they can decide if they want to use kitsch or not. That's up to them. They have to decide and realize it. But at least not use the word art, then we can start getting somewhere.
Well, you obviously have the right to try that. Mm-hmm. There are several technical difficulties also, for example, in the Norwegian language, to describe what I need to call artistic activities in general, as a general umbrella term in Norwegian, and not using the art, is perhaps possible when you are a painter. But when you are talking about human creativity in general and all the fields within traditional art forms, you will have a lot of problems in the Norwegian language actually formulating sentences which make sense for people. And I've confronted this myself a lot when writing about this. It's actually quite hard. In painting, you can call yourself a painter. But what will you call all disciplines, for example? Being an artist is an umbrella term for many disciplines. So what word will you propose for example, describing creative disciplines as a whole, you know? So we meet a lot of challenges in the language itself, which can be worked with. You can work around that, you can work with that. Yeah. Yeah, but it has to be worked with because it's very difficult. And whatever word you use, you will meet obstacles. So it's like, so my obstacle is of course the Kantian Industrial Revolution the definition of genius and originality, right? So I had that's not my obstacle. Your obstacle is the garden gnome. And you have to work against that. That's not going to go away. You have to confront that. And that's going to take a lot of work. You need to theorize about that. You need to write about that. You know, essays, articles take people away from the garden gnome cliche, right? So that's your obstacle. So whatever word you're using, you will face some trouble. And that might be successful, or what I'm doing, or whatever. I have no idea, but you know, there will be some obstacles.
There will be blood. No, but that's a fantastic thing, because then you can clarify your values even more.
Yes.
And I think it's, that's, well, to answer concretely on what you're saying there. So the funny thing is, if you really go into it and you start reading what these kitsch critics are saying, when they really want to take kitsch, they are accusing kitsch of being modern art. Then they're saying that it's mass produced, that it's bad anatomy, that it's stereotypical expressions. Mm. And then you start thinking, well, that's kind of what I've seen in modernism, isn't it? And it's that kind of things that you can easily show are falsehood, because they are so zealous when it comes to getting kitsch that they end up shooting themselves in the foot.
Yes, and I think that the kitsch debate and the introduction of this word relatively provocatively in 2000, was it?
Well, in 98 officially.
Yes, around this time, about 25 years ago. Was certainly very well timed, and it was certainly very appropriate, and certainly made a lot of people think, yes, you will not win the war in a very short amount of time. You know, these are long historical processes. And a lot of people now in my generation, our generation, do things that cannot be considered fine art. Right? You have a lot of people, a lot of composers, painters, craftsmen, musicians, people in various disciplines are doing things that are not fine art. So all these people obviously need some help. And I think that's what we're trying to do here, is to establish, from your point of view, that academia is very important. I come from the working class. I feel connected to people on the street, what people actually use words in everyday language. For me, that's...
I come from the upper class, just to clarify that. No.
Of course, you know. And this is going to be a long and interesting struggle, but one has to work with it thoroughly and long term, and also look at the language, the individual languages. I mean, our language is Norwegian and a little bit English. To make this work in the language, we need to work with it a lot. It's not done yet. I feel that there is a lot of work to be done still with this that will help the whole project and will help all those people who cannot and will not identify themselves as fine artists. And there are quite a lot of them out there, and they're all by themselves, and they need some help.
Yeah.